Welcome to Off Leash and Unfiltered. Trigger warning, I'm Katie Pepe, delivering the truth in dog training. Hey everybody, this is your host, Katie Pepe. Before we jump in, I just wanted to take a quick second and remind you to hit the subscribe button because that helps us so much. We appreciate every subscribe and follow, and we have so much valuable information we want to share with you, so we don't want you to miss an episode. Without further ado, let's jump in. Hey everyone, thanks for being here today on this beautiful, I'm recording this on a Tuesday. I have to think about it because it all kind of blends together. You'll probably be listening to this on a Friday, presumably. But today is supposed to be a scorcher. And I'm not complaining. I hate it when people complain about the heat, especially when they've been bitching about the cold all winter. And I am one of those people. I am always cold. Always cold. In fact, you might find me with a sweatshirt on today. Because even though it's supposed to be about 93 degrees outside, my space here, our training center, is like a meat locker. And so if I sit in this chair just flapping my gums for this podcast, I am probably going to get cold and I'm going to have to bundle up. But we're putting the air conditioner in today because my mom will be at the house and she comes all the time and she helps me out with the cleaning and take care of my dogs and stuff while I'm working. So super helpful. So grateful for her. But, you know, I said to my husband this morning before work, and we never do anything before work. We're not morning people. We're always in a rush. But I was like, you have to put the air conditioner in. Like this has to happen. My mom's going to be here and she can't handle it. And the air conditioner in her car isn't working. She doesn't have the air conditioner in her own apartment yet. So she will have no reprieve. And I said, I feel kind of like she's a neglected house pet and we're going to come home and find her like unconscious from heat stroke or something. So air conditioner is going in today. But anyways, enough babbling. Let's talk about dogs because that's what we're all here for. And, you know, I talk about all of these things, but I don't think I ever really talk about how they all relate to each other. So most people, when they come to see us, they're here usually because they want obedience or because they have a behavior that they can't stop. And there's a third piece to this, which is state of mind, right? And there's always going to be some overlap, and it's all a little hazy depending on how you want to define each of these things. And I don't want to split hairs about how they're really defined, but I'm going to just talk a little bit about the three distinct categories in my mind and kind of how they all relate to each other and the things we do to make progress in each of those areas, because those are things you can apply at home. And I think too, this is so valuable because, like, I think in general, when people think of training, they do think of commands. I've said that many times before. And yeah, that's a huge piece of your training, but it will only get you so far, guys. We have dogs come in here all the time that know their commands. They know them inside out. And people still struggle in certain areas with their dogs, depending on what their issues are, because the commands just won't fix that stuff. And so let's talk about how we do fix that. And sort of when clients go through our programs, we always start out with the obedient stuff for several reasons, right? We like to lay that foundation, but also that's just the most basic piece of e-collar training. But if they do their homework and they stick with the program, we're probably going to move on to more in-depth stuff that then bleeds into these other two categories besides obedience. So in my mind, the three pieces that we have when we're working with a dog and they come in for their program, the three pieces that we're dealing with are obedience, behavior, generally meaning like behavior modification, and state of mind. And again, there's some overlap, right? But so those are kind of the three major players in dog training. In my mind, when I see a dog, these are the three things I'm going after. And we have a couple of different programs for people, right? So someone comes in to do our really basic e-collar program, which is our most basic program is 2 weeks. And that's basically just enough time for us to get your dog fairly fluent with the e-collar and their commands, right? So we're focused on obedience in that program. Yes, there is some behavior modification because we do inhibit unwanted behaviors, but they're generally pretty simple behaviors like barking, jumping on people, pulling on the leash. These are things we can just punish those behaviors. And, you know, a contingent negative consequence attached to those behaviors, and those behaviors go away. So it's pretty simple. But so our most basic program is it's focused almost entirely on obedience. And there's a sliver of like behavior modification to just knock out some of those simple nuisance behaviors that like most dogs have, right? Really, really easy to get rid of most of that stuff. And then we have a more in-depth program, which is geared more towards, yes, we do the obedience, but there's more behavior modification going on because usually these dogs are dealing with other stuff like fear, anxiety, reactivity, aggression, resource guarding, whatever it may be. So there's a bigger piece there to the behavior modification. And that tends to be tied very heavily with state of mind. And so usually in that program, and what you would do if you're dealing with that stuff at home too, is we're leveraging the obedience in a way that helps us to modify behaviors and address state of mind. So what do I mean by that? All right, let's take the obedience piece, right? Maybe you've taught your dog their obedience already. Maybe you're working on it. Obedience means you're going to teach your dog what certain words mean. You're going to take those words, you're going to tie them to behaviors, right? Sit means put your butt on the ground. Down means put your elbows on the ground. Place means lay down on the cot. Heel means stay next to my left leg at my heel. Come means I want you to come to me and sit down in front of me or near me or whatever your standard is, right? So you're going to teach your dog those words and the behaviors that are attached to them or whatever commands you want to teach. That's obedience. But you're not done then, right? Because then at the end of all that, you still have to add in the accountability for us. That's really, really important. So once your dog knows all that stuff, now you're going to say, okay, now it's not negotiable. And here's the thing, guys. That's absolutely necessary if you want to have your dog off leash. You cannot have your dog off leash. I'm not going to say you can't, right? But you absolutely should not have your dog off leash if you have not attached contingent negative consequences to not listening to you, to non-compliance. It is a huge mistake. Your dog is not safe. The other people and dogs around you may not be safe. You're opening up the door for disaster to strike. So, and I think I've mentioned this before in a previous episode. I hate it when people say, please do this or please don't do that. Because it's like there's some kind of authority on the subject and like it's their job to tell you what to do, like in your home with your dog. But this is one place where I will say, please don't do that. Or I'll you know what? Forget being polite. Don't fucking do that. Do not take your dog off leash if you have not finished the job, which is there is a negative consequence if you don't listen to me. It's uncomfortable if you don't listen to me. It's so important because otherwise they won't. And yes, I know your dog is good most of the time, unless, until, right? But that's the point. Unless and until are when it's important. That is the point. So we just hear all too often, you know, dogs off leash and running up to other dogs and running up to other people. We just had Mavi here the other day. He was known for running up to people on the trail, random people. These are people they don't know. He would run up to people and jump up and bite at their clothes bite at their jacket. He ripped a hat off some lady's head. Guys, no. Like, I understand you feel like your dog needs exercise and you're trying to do what's best for your dog. Trust me, letting your dog off leash with bad behavior, if they're not reliable coming back to you and all this stuff, that is not what's best for your dog. What's best for your dog is to be on a leash. Take them for a walk. Holy cow. Right? Or like Susie that we just had here, she was known for running up to other dogs and they would almost always have a squabble. It's just not worth it, guys. Don't do it. And I think we pin ourselves into this box where we feel like we have to let our dogs run. We have to get our dogs off leash. No, you don't have to. In fact, I would view it completely the opposite. You can't. You cannot until they are properly trained, which means not just teaching obedience, but adding the accountability. It's absolutely necessary, okay? But so that is the most basic training in the world. That's obedience with accountability. Okay, and by the way, your obedience counts for almost nothing until you add that accountability, which is kind of a nice segue into the behavior modification piece, right? Because we were just talking about dogs that have some behaviors we don't necessarily really care for, especially, you know, running up to people and like biting at their clothes, right? So, but here's the thing. In those situations, you can't rely on obedience, right? So if I have a dog that's running up to people and jumping and biting at their clothes, right? So just using Mavi as an example, but it could be any bad behavior. The answer to that is not a good recall. Yes, a good recall is necessary if you want to have your dog off leash, but that doesn't fix this problem. What fixes this problem is making it extremely uncomfortable to go run up to people and jump and nip at their clothes, right? So there's a conversation to be had there, and it's so important. Just calling your dog back. See, that is the equivalent of asking your dog to sit at the door. Well, it's worse, right? Because the behavior is somewhat worse. But for the same reason that we don't tell dogs to sit at the door, guys. Why not? Well, because I don't want to have to tell my dog anything at the door. I don't want to have to tell my dog every time we go to the door, hey, be good. Hey, be polite. Hey, be good. Hey, be polite. Can you be good? Can you be polite? Can you? No, we don't do that here. We have expectations, which means I'm going to tell you when you're too forward at the door, you're crowding the door, you're spring loading at the door, you're moving through the door, any of those things, I'm going to let you know because it's going to be uncomfortable. And when you don't do those things and you're very polite at the door, I'll let you know that too. Hey, good job. Good. Okay, so there is a huge difference between setting an expectation or just asking your dog to perform a trick every time they're about to do something bad. And you can see how one results in a much more respectful dog, who also, by the way, is just much easier to manage, right? Because you don't have to manage them. They now just make good choices. So it's draining for the owner. Every time we go to a door, I have to pay all my attention to the dog. I have to tell him what to do. Every time we go out on a trail, I need to watch for people and dogs, and I have to call him back and all these things. And it's like, no, you need to teach your dog not to be a prick. So that, my friend, is behavior modification, right? It's like unwanted behaviors go away. Because we attach negative consequences to them and we set expectations. So avoiding those conversations will never result in modified behavior, guys. What it will result in is maybe your dog kind of listening sometimes and performing whatever silly trick it is you ask them to do in those pivotal moments. But without a doubt, sometimes they're not going to, and it's going to get by you, right? You're not going to see the person coming, or you're not going to get the right sit at the door, or whatever it is. And it's just, you live your whole life that way, and things don't change. You need to set standards and expectations, and you need to have those difficult conversations with your dog where it's like, no, I'm not going to read you an instruction manual every time we go to a door or every time we're out on a trail and someone comes along. Now, there are some dogs that are highly reactive, and I'm not really talking about them. Those dogs are work. At least sometimes they are. And sometimes that lasts a little longer and it takes a little longer, and we're going to get into that in a minute. But dogs that are just clowns, like everything's a game. They like to be pushy. They like to use people as their own personal toy. That's a hard no. Okay. So the commands, the obedience is nice and great and necessary, but it is not the thing that fixes unwanted behaviors. Okay. That's behavior modification. And that requires some direct conversations with the dog about those behaviors in addition to the obedience piece, right? Correcting unwanted behaviors and then cementing and rewarding better behaviors. And I, for one, really, really enjoy that, not because I'm sadistic and I like correcting dogs, but because, again, I've said this a bazillion times, that information is just hard to find, and it's what everybody I meet needs help with. Everybody I meet needs help with this. Nobody is doing it. Nobody is good. Some people are trying, but no one's good at it. There's so much conflicting information out there. There's so much false information out there. And it is the thing that is lacking in almost every human-dog relationship. When I meet people, their relationship with their dog is almost always wildly imbalanced. And there's tons of excitement, and there's tons of play, and there's tons of food, and there's tons of affection, and there's tons of freedom, right? And there's nothing else. There is no discipline. There are no boundaries. There are no consequences. There are no corrections. There is none of that. There's no structure, right? The dog is fully autonomous, and everything is fun and games, fun and games, fun and games, fun and games. And sometimes this creates a dog who's just out of their mind, frantic, right? Whatever the worst stuff is that's in there starts to come out. They get really pushy. Like those dogs that if you don't feed them fast enough, they jump up and they bump you with their nose or they nip you. Like, just feed me, just dispense. It's your job, servant. Right? So guys, you got to balance things, right? It has to be, you have to have some expectations. You have to have some standards, because if you don't, there really is no reason for your dog to listen to you anyway. Right. But also, you are not doing them any favors, guys. It is not kind to your dog, just like it wouldn't be kind to your children either, or anybody, to live with no structure, no rules, no boundaries. I mean, that is insanity. It's insanity, and it leads to bad stuff, because we would all be, if we lived with no structure, no rules, no boundaries, and some people more or less try to live that way, we would all be the worst versions of ourselves. I mean, it would just be awful. There has to be expectations on you. There has to be standards for you. There has to be. And there has to be for your dog. They're no different. Right? And again, I always say this, they're just doing what comes naturally. And yeah, sure, sometimes it's fine for your dog to just be a dog. We're going to get into that too. You know what? Maybe I'll even save that for another episode, and I'll do that one next. Because that's a really common question I get. Because again, everybody I meet, guys, everybody, they need help with the discipline piece. They need help with setting rules, setting boundaries, issuing consequences. People suck at that stuff. Like, no offense, I'm not picking on you. Like, and I love my customers. I have the most fantastic clients. But people just in general, we suck at this piece. And I get it. We love our dogs and we think of them as being like innocent and good and all these things that they're not. No, I'm kidding. Like, they're not bad. They're just, They're dogs, they're animals, and they don't have the human stuff that you have. They don't have the prefrontal cortex stuff that you have. They're not thinking like you're thinking. They're just doing what comes naturally. And, you know, bullying, pestering, pushing around, teething, like all these things come naturally to dogs, just like they do to some people. And so they'll just do that, right? And you just kind of become like the weakling litter mate who deserves to be bowled over or used for fun. And it sounds awful, but it actually doesn't make your dog a bad dog. It's just dog stuff, right? But it's up to you to say, okay, like, we're going to stop sweeping it under the rug and we're going to balance things. And I'm going to learn how to have boundaries and standards and like enforce them. Because that's the other piece. If you don't enforce them, guys, they're not real rules. I always say they're rules in your head, right? They're not real. But so that's the behavior modification piece is really has very little to do with obedience. So here's the thing. If you are a person who didn't want to teach your dog all that stuff, you don't want your dog to walk in a tight heel. You don't want your dog to lay on place for hours. You don't want your dog to know how to hold it down when someone comes through the door. Here's the thing. You don't have to do any of that. You really don't. I mean, if you have a dog with some serious issues who's really, really has no respect for his own family, has aggressive behaviors, like, we're going to do all that stuff. Like, I mean, we do all that stuff for most of our customers anyway, but you can't afford to skip that stuff because you need all the leverage you can get. Right. But if you have a pretty good dog who just has a few bad behaviors, you don't have to do any of that obedience stuff. So I think that's a really good point that I'm not sure I've ever really articulated on the show before, but like no one really gives a shit. Like if your dog can sit or go to place or walk in a heel. And if you don't care, guess what? You don't have to do it. And you can still address the behaviors you don't like. Because they're unrelated, guys. You can teach your dog standards and you can tie negative consequence to unwanted behaviors without teaching any obedience at all. So let's say my problem is just that my dog bolts through the front door and they jump all over people. Well, I can fix both of those things with no obedience. None. You don't need any. There's no commands involved, right? Those are both conversations where it involves, hey, don't run through the door. There's a correction for that. Don't jump on people. There's a correction for that. And guess what? You do that properly. You might have to do it 2-3 times, something like that, if you do it right. And guess what? Your dog doesn't do that stuff anymore. And if you're happy with a dog who's pretty friendly, pretty laid back, pretty social, doesn't have any bad behaviors really, right? And you've knocked that other stuff out? Well, good for you. Great. You probably still shouldn't take your dog off property off leash, right? Because they don't have formal training. Like they don't have a good recall, which I still think that's just non-negotiable. If your dog's going to be off leash, you need to be able to call them back. And I'll never budge an inch on that. Never. But my point here is behavior mod and obedience are not the same. And sometimes obedience is totally unnecessary for it. Okay, but when we get into state of mind, obedience does become necessary. So let's talk about that third category, which is state of mind training. And guys, this is my favorite stuff. Love the show? Well, I have great news. We are offering an inexpensive subscription to our new premium content. This is content that isn't available to the general public. We make it just for our subscribers. We're going to cover a variety of new topics in these episodes, and I think it's going to be a ton of fun. So you can jump right down into the show notes to get that website address, and then skip over there and sign up for this premium content. Just wanted to take a second to let you guys know about that. Thank you so much for your support. And now, on with the show. You know, and it's funny because, you know, I'll talk on social media about the state of mind stuff that I'm doing with the dogs. And I think sometimes the owners get panicked because they seem to think that I'm I think there's something like dramatically wrong with their dog, or that their dog is like, quote unquote, a really bad dog in some way. And I don't at all. This is just what I do. This is what I love to do, is state of mind work. And so if your dog needs some of that, I get really into it. I get really into it. And you're going to see that probably on my social media, because I like to do it and I like to show it and talk about it. But that does, I'm not going to say require, but it's pretty darn difficult without any obedience foundation, because you're really going to leverage that obedience to help chip away a state of mind. So when we're dealing with things that involve more nervous system, right? Dogs that are highly reactive, dogs that are aggressive, dogs that are fearful, dogs that have a lot of anxiety. Like, this is nervous system stuff, and it's not as simple as just correcting an unwanted behavior. Yes, there will be some of that, just like there is with all dogs. But mostly when we're dealing with that stuff, we have a strong obedience foundation laid, right? And of course, we overlay the e-collar. I'm sure you know that if you've listened to any of my other stuff or watched us at all. A strong obedience foundation. And then what we do is we're able to take the dog and go into whatever those triggering situations are. And we're going to leverage the obedience foundation in a way, with the accountability, in a way that basically, I'm going to use an ugly word here. You ready? Forces. Everybody hates that word. Ooh, force. She's a force trainer, not a force-free trainer like me. Yes, we use force here, guys. It's an ugly four-letter word. No, it's five-letter words. Oh, it's early. I get up early on Tuesdays. But it is an F word. The ugly F word in dog training. Force. Okay, I'm way off track. I'm getting in the weeds here. We take that obedience foundation that we have moved into non-compliance training, meaning we have added the accountability to it, right? We've taught the dog, this stuff's non-negotiable. When I ask you to do it, you do it. And if you don't, I'm going to get you to do it with accountability, usually with e-collar, stim, or maybe leash stuff, just depending. And we go into these triggering situations for the dog, right? So if you have a dog that's afraid of strangers, we're going to go work around strangers, right? We're probably going to start with it a little bit easier, where we have more room at a park or a parking lot. But we're going to ultimately be working right in the mix where it's busy. We're going to go to downtown Portland. We're going to go inside of Tractor Supply where the spaces are tight. We're going to go to the pet store. We're going to do all these things where there are people, because you're afraid of them. But now, instead of focusing on them, ready for the F word? I'm going to force the dog to focus on a proper heel. And guess what? Their brain can't do both of those things at once. So if you are skillful in the use of your e-collar, you will be able to grab the dog's attention and pull it back to heel every time it starts to migrate. And a beautiful thing starts to happen where the dog starts spending time around triggers, not focusing on them, but doing something else. And that something else is focusing on their commands and engaging with their handler. And after you spend enough time doing that, guess what happens? It starts to become normal and easy. So you see, forcing dogs to do things they're not comfortable with is for their own benefit. Because a little bit of episodic stress going into a situation you find uncomfortable, or having to do a command you don't want to do, having an uncomfortable correction sometimes because you don't want to do it. Those things are brief and fleeting. Whereas just allowing your dog to stay fearful of people forever is insanely cruel. Because you can't eliminate people from the world, guys. You can't modify the world and modify reality to fit the dog. Nature is pretty harsh. And guess what? Nature doesn't care. It's not going to modify itself for the benefit of your dog. Okay? Your dog has to fit into the world and they have to fit into your life. And they have to be able to exist in normal reality, normal situations. It doesn't mean they have to love it. It doesn't mean they have to be perfect. But they have to be able to at least tolerate normal everyday situations. And that will require the use of force. Right, but ultimately in the end, most dogs, it becomes easy. And that's the magic. Like, that's the beauty of it. That's why we do it. We don't do this stuff to be mean, to be bullies, right? Which is what other people would like you to believe. And there is a ceiling sometimes because we haven't gotten into this yet, but genetics play a role. So how far your dog can go, how much work you're going to have to put in, how much feedback you're going to have to give them, ultimately, where they land and in their comfortability being in those situations, there's a genetic component that you can't do anything about. And there is no way to know until you just do the work. And you take the dog as far as you can. But 99% of dogs can be incredible. Like, so much better. So much better. Some dogs do 180s. Some dogs do them right away. Some dogs, it takes longer. And some dogs, they struggle a little bit, maybe forever. But that's pretty rare. But that state of mind work, right, is dealing with the stuff that's more nervous system related. And when we're doing that stuff, we are heavily leveraging non-negotiable obedience. But we use it in a way that really desensitizes the dog to triggers. Because here's the thing, the mind and the body are not separate, guys. Not entirely. They are absolutely tied together. Right? You get nervous in your mind, your heart speeds up. Maybe you get the nervous parts. We have dogs that do that. They are tied together. But it's not always that the body follows the mind, right? So if you listen, most people think that you think something or you feel something and then you do. And I don't think that's always true. Yes, it's true a lot for humans, especially when we're talking about, again, that cognitive thought process, right? Like you think, oh, I'm hungry, I want pancakes, and then you go make pancakes. But not everything is like that. Not everything is that simple or cut and dried. I really believe, and I don't want to get too deep in the weeds here again, but I really believe that emotion is largely like smoke to fire. Like, it's a byproduct of the thing that's happening. I don't really think that emotion causes dogs to do things. Now, when I say emotion, I use that term loosely because I don't think they have emotions like we do, right? Because our emotions are tied to thoughts. And dogs, I think largely it's not, right? It's just a neurological process that's happening in the brain. And so there's an overwhelming kind of sensation, right, that you could call emotion. But I don't think that is the basis for their behavior most of the time, right? But most people have a pretty two-dimensional view of behavior, and they think the dog feels this way, so they do this. And I just think that's the wrong approach. And even if you're right, it doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, you can't like lobotomize your dog and do some magical brain procedure if you make them feel different. The only way that's going to happen is to make them do different, and then the feelings can follow. And we absolutely find that to be true. So here's some examples of some of our more advanced e-collar work and state of mind stuff that we do, right? If we have a dog that's laying down, but they're up on their haunches, that might be fine. But if we're working with a dog who tends to be very flighty, very nervy, very stressed in a situation, and we put them in a down and they lay down like that where they're right up on their haunches, right? They could just spring up at any moment. We're going to ask them to roll those hips to the side and relax a little bit. And we're usually able to do that with just a little bit of really low e-collar stimulation, right? And some dogs in the beginning, we have to help them a little bit physically by showing them what to do. But not usually. You'd be surprised like how naturally they pick up on that. And so by helping that dog just pivot their hips to the side, they're now in a more relaxed position, which kind of tells their brain there's no immediate threat, right? Because those are incongruent. If there's an immediate threat, if your life is in danger, you don't relax. You don't go into a vulnerable position like that. So if you can get the dog to do that, if you can physically manipulate them to do that, that increases the likelihood that their brain shuts off the whole threat anticipation business. Okay. Maybe not completely and maybe not immediately, but it's going to have a dampening effect on it. And so, and again, this is cumulative, right? So the more you do this stuff, right? We go out to places where the dog's a little uncomfortable and we go, okay, I'm going to have you lay down. I'm going to have you pivot your hips to the side and just relax. And we're just going to hang out here and see that nothing bad is happening, right? And I'm not going to put tension on the leash. I'm not going to act nervous and anxious and pacing around, pulling on the leash. I'm not going to be talking to you nonstop. I'm going to be quiet. I'm going to be calm and I'm going to be assertive, right? If I want you to do something, I'm going to tell you and you're going to do it. And what we find is, as we move through the program and we do more and more and more of that, the dog starts to exhale. And it's so amazing. But that's not born of just obedience. It's obedience with accountability and knowing how to use it in a way that will help the dog. And there are some more subtle things too. So if you have a dog with a reactivity history, or who just tends to be really uncomfortable, and you see them staring at the thing that makes them uncomfortable, tracking people or animals or bikes or whatever it is that makes them uncomfortable, we can actually use low e-collar stim to teach the dog to avert their gaze away from the thing that's causing them distress. And again, the dog's brain can't really be split like that, right? So dogs can't really react to things that they can't look at. And that's why the key when we're dealing with highly reactive dogs is we don't let them stare at things, not things that tend to be triggers anyway, right? If you're dog reactive, you cannot stare at other dogs. Doesn't mean you can't look at them, but it should be a casual look and look away and no big deal. If you're staring at them, bad news, right? So we can use, and that's sometimes that's higher stim because they're so stimulated, but usually we have a dog that's laying down that's fairly calm, but we see them like looking at something in the distance, staring, kind of tracking it. Their eyes are moving with it. We can use e-collar stim, right? And it's going to be at a level that's just low to maybe annoying. And it's going to tell them, hey, why don't you peel your gaze away from that thing? Now, they don't know that, right? They don't necessarily, some dogs pick it up very naturally, very quickly. Other dogs, it takes us a little bit of time to teach them that. But when I say a little bit of time, guys, it's still usually one lesson. Like, this is not something that takes forever. It takes a long time to rehearse it and have that cumulative effect. But just teaching the dog how to do it. So I had someone here the other day with a dog. I think I talked about this on a recent episode, who has, Mr. Diggy, has some TV reactivity. And I was showing them how to teach him to avert his gaze so that they can put him on place in the living room by the TV and just run that TV all day. Right? No, he's not going to be there literally all day without moving. But when he's in the house, he's mostly going to be on place with the TV going. Right? Because we're going to fix that shit. That's why. But so now they're going to have some tools to help him because he knows the place command. He's going to be held accountable for the place command. And they can use lower stim to help him avert his gaze away from the TV. Okay. If you have a dog that's frantic, is a busybody, can't shut off, we're going to ask you to do lots of duration work where they have to hold it down, hold place. But it goes deeper than that, guys, because again, just commands won't fix this stuff, right? So you can put your dog on place and they can stay busy. What do I mean by that? Frantically sniffing, nibbling at the cot, maybe your softie that gives them a bone to chew on. It's like those are the things that avoid fixing the problem. So we're going to teach your dog an off switch. Right? We're going to really work on helping them calm down. So they have to lay on place and they have to not do those things and not find ways to stay busy, stay concerned, stay excited, whatever the problem is. And we can take it a step further. Right? Maybe they're the type where every time they hear a noise, they perk up. Maybe their excitement is on a hair trigger and it's like, okay, well, if I see my dog on place and, you know, they hear a pin drop in the other room and those ears perk up, I can use really low e-collar stim to just tap, tap, get the ears to come down. This isn't a punishment, guys. This isn't a high correction. Dog's not jumping out of their skin. This is really low. I'm talking levels you can't even feel on your skin. Okay, and that's just those tiny moments that seem so innocuous that don't matter. Like that state of mind work where it's like, hey, don't worry about it. Like I know you have that radar running in the background all the time. Let's start to shut that off. Let's start to turn that down a little, right? The e-collar becomes... And as you're moving through the program and doing this stuff, your dog is developing this really deep relationship with the e-collar, like this amazing understanding of it. Like they become one with the e-collar, right? Like they just know when they feel it, it's like automatically a calming sensation. Now, yes, it can be punishing too, right? But they come to know it does all of these things and it's tied to their behavior and they know exactly what it's tied to and how, because you're going to be skilled when you're using it. But this low stim will automatically start to generate a calming response. It's amazing. Right? Your dog's in their kennel and they're a little too up and they're a little too like, when are you coming to get me? When are you coming to get me? A little tap, tap at a four. Again, I can't even feel a four. And they just lay down and go, and they fall asleep. Right. So if you can start doing things like that with a dog that's afraid, with a dog that's anxious, with a dog that's a busybody, you start to help them turn all that down. And I think it's one of the most amazing things we do that people miss. Like they don't get it. And I don't expect them to get it because like it's a whole other world. And it's a world most people aren't talking about. But just so you know, if you didn't know, these are things you can do. Like if you have a dog with any of these issues, these are things you can do that will really help you to cultivate long-term change. Not just some kind of a band-aid, not some kind of surface level, like teach your dog to sit. This goes way, way deeper than that. And it's really, really cool stuff. But so hopefully that kind of clarifies the difference between obedience, behavior modification, in state of mind work, and how they're all kind of tied together. Hey guys, thanks for joining us today. I really hope you enjoyed the show. If there's a specific topic you'd like to hear discussed, you can send that to me directly via email or fan mail. just jump down into the show notes. That information will be there for you. I really look forward to hearing from you. Thanks for supporting the show, and I look forward to next time.